Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Taylor Millard is a writer and a journalist and a very deep thinker. I love having him on the show. And I want to talk to him about our broken political system. The question of the day, is the two-party system broken? And would a third party rising to be a part of this actually help make our politics better? So we'll dive into that with my friend Taylor Millard here in just a second. I want to thank Louisville Cabinets and Countertops for being a sponsor of our podcast. Tim Montgomery is fantastic. They did our kitchen in our last house, and I'm confident that when our last house sold in a day, that our kitchen was part of what sold it, because Louisville Cabinets and Countertops took what was a very mundane, average, below-the-bar kitchen and turned it into what we thoroughly enjoyed for years in that home. And I love the work that they do, and I stand by it. And I got to tell you, if you're thinking about doing your kitchen and making your house your perfect home, go see my friend at Tim Montgomery at Louisville Cabinets and Countertops, because they'll take great care of you. And I'm not just saying that as a platitude. I mean, if you don't even know how you want your kitchen to look yet, go see them, because they'll walk you through. They'll look at your colors. They'll look at your style. They'll figure out what you want. They'll help you design it from start to finish. That's what's so awesome about it, okay? Give them a call at 502-930-3304 or go see them at 6200 Hit Lane, or just check out their website, LouisvilleCabinetsAndCountertops.com. All right, now to the conversation. We started off talking about my elk hunt coming up, which I can't wait for, and I'll have pictures of that. And then we dove into the broken two-party system with my friend Taylor Millard. So what's going on in your world in the great state of Texas?
Really kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the election, and waiting for some sense of normalcy to come about.
Yeah.
Although to be quite honest, I'm still buzzing from the Stars Stanley Cup run.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
I didn't know anybody was actually still watching sports, because there's so little of it to watch.
It's like I have been a Dallas Stars fan since they moved here.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first game I went to, I was in, it would have been 92, 93, so I would have still been in middle school, and went and saw them play the Detroit Red Wings, and at the old Reunion Arena, and I was a season ticket holder for a little bit in my 20s.
Yeah,
hockey
to me is like, I watch the fights. That's it. And when they started like making it harder to do that, I stopped watching it altogether.
Yeah. No, I get it. I love the big hits. I love the fights. I love the skill too, though.
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of skill in it. That's definitely, it's like golf, right? Like, it's not all that exciting to watch for me personally, but there's an enormous amount of skill in it. Hockey is exciting to watch, more exciting to watch than golf. It's exciting to watch when those explosive moments happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, I tell you what hockey is to me. Hockey is, somebody took soccer and said, what a boring game that is. Let's make it fun by putting it on ice.
Yeah. Okay. So see, as a soccer fan, but yeah. Yeah. I can see what you would say. I know people who have gotten into it, because they were soccer fans.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's
but fun. How about you? What's going on in your world?
So I'm getting ready for an elk hunt, my first ever.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been hunting quite a few times, but never for elk. And so this one's going to be interesting, because I've never done it, number one. And I'm insistent on doing it kind of like, you can't hunt elk from a tree stand. I mean, I guess you could, but you wouldn't be very successful, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's kind of a raw experience. It's an organic experience. It's a very in touch with the land experience because of how you have to do it. So I'm not under any illusions that I'm going to actually get one. But my nephew is coming up with me from Texas, and we're going to the backside of the Rocky Mountain National Park. You can't hunt in the park, but we're going to a place called Never Summer Wilderness, which is attached or next to, adjacent to. And we're just gonna like huff through the woods for a couple of days and see what we can find. And I think more than anything, it's just gonna be that experience in nature, the learning experience, the trial by fire. So I'm excited about that. Like you though, I'm kind of hanging back on a lot of things in my life to see what happens in this election. You know, Joe Biden tweeted the other day. He said, "But I'll be, I can't remember the exact words of it, but he was like, well, I'll be a Democrat president, I'll be a Republican president, I'll be everyone's a president because we're all Americans." And I tweeted back and I was like, "Dude, then why is your party trying to destroy so many of the things that make America what we are? That is the free market and, you know, the Second Amendment and self-determination and all that kind of stuff." So I don't know. I'm actually deeply concerned about the election and what happens to the country after, regardless of the outcome. You know, we've had Jo Jorgensen on the podcast. I think she's interesting. Obviously no traction, but that's kind of one of why I wanted to bring you on. I know you call yourself a small L libertarian. I'm a conservative that leans libertarian. I'm not a member of any official party. And I was just like, you know, I'm thinking through this, and I know a lot of my listeners and, you know, even myself included at this point, I think probably going to throw in with the devil we know versus what could be. But that being said, one thing that disappoints me about the American political system right now is I used to be staunchly against the multi-party system. I was like, well, if we become like England and we're parliamentary and, you know, nothing will ever get done. And I feel like I've had somewhat of an epiphany this year because the two-party system is decidedly set up in such a way as to, one, protect itself at all costs, and then, two, essentially each party exists for the sole purpose of opposing the other. You know, the Republican Party doesn't really stand for anything anymore other than we're going to oppose the Democrats. And the Democratic Party stands for we're going to oppose the Republicans. And then there's these forces within both parties that have their agenda, but they're kind of working within the shell or zombie of a party. And the American people are not being serviced, in my opinion, by either one. So I kind of had this epiphany. I was like, well, if we had a third party that was legit, let's say we had 40% Republicans and 40% Democrats and 20% Libertarians in Congress. Can you imagine the coalitions that could form that would move the ball forward on several important issues for Americans, important issues that maybe the Democrats might coalesce with the Libertarians about, but the Republicans hate, issues that the Democrats or the Republicans and the Libertarians might coalesce around, like lower taxes, more freedom, that the Democrats might hate. We could get those things done, and it would be less two-sided. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
So there's an interesting, you know, this is something that has been on my mind for a little bit. And your comments about, you know, when you said to me, "Hey, I want you on the show to talk about the dysfunctional system or the problem of the two-party system."
Right.
I think I'm not willing to go to a parliamentary system. I don't want to do that.
Well, let me clarify that I don't want a parliament. what I meant was, by saying parliament, and I'll let you finish your point, but I mean, what I meant by parliament, I really just meant the system where in Europe, a lot of the countries have multiple parties and they have to form coalitions in order to govern on certain issues. I definitely don't want to change our system of government. I just think that it wasn't necessarily designed in the first place to only house two parties. And so I would like to see the rise of other opinions that could coalesce around certain issues that could move the ball forward on important things by coalescing.
You say that, and yet if you look at the history of this country, it has typically had two major parties.
Right.
You had the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the Anti-Federalists became the Democratic Republicans. And the Democratic Republicans dominated politics for a while until I want to say it was the Whigs came about. And you saw everything kind of fall apart from there. And you had the Whigs fall apart because they couldn't agree on slavery. You had the Democratic Republicans fall apart because really of just the fights, the inner fights, specifically within John Quincy Adams's administration, and honestly, to a certain extent, also within the James Monroe the James Monroe presidency, which was supposed to be the era of good feelings, and it really just kind of let everything just kind of fell apart from then. And what you had was the Democratic Republican Party, and it ended up becoming the Democratic Party under Andrew Jackson. You had the Whig Party as well, and then the Whigs fell apart, and you had the creation of the modern Republican Party. When you think about it, there has been change, even within the Republican and the Democratic Party, over the over century that they've been in place.
Right.
You've had the Republicans go from being a more big government party that espoused big government to one that tended to be a little bit more smaller government. And it was also a party that was a little bit more, okay, do we want to be, let's be more careful about getting involved into foreign conflicts, to one which got involved in Iraq, which got involved in Afghanistan, which got involved in Iraq, which, you know, you can, which is, you know, became much more hawkish. Mm-hmm. Then you had a Democratic Party, which was states' rights to a certain extent. Then it became more of a bigger government party. It became pretty hawkish on certain things. It became, I mean, you had really the first a first modern nationalization attempt by the Harry Truman, which ended up falling apart because he tried to nationalize the steel industry during the Korean War, right. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can't do that. So what you've seen, and then it kind of dabbled in being more dovey, but in reality is about as hawkish as the Republicans are, maybe just a little bit less. So what you have right now, as you get into the 2020s, what you have right now are two parties which claim to want two vastly different things. But in reality, what they want is pretty much the same thing with flashpoints on the outer edges, where they just want to be the ones in control. Now, the flashpoints they have in particular tend to be stuff on social issues. You still have certain sects of Republicans who are very social conservatives. They're not fans of gay marriage. They're not fans of abortion. They're not fans of pornography. And so they're trying to figure out ways to advance their agenda, if there is a way to do it. Now, there are also Democrats who are against pornography as well, but in a different form, as they talk about claiming they want to be for child sex trafficking. In reality, they just want to control what's on your computer.
Let me challenge you a little bit on the fact that the parties only want minor different things. I think in a lot of ways, the parties force the country to work a certain way, as you say, very similar. But I think there's some pretty stark differences between the economic approach of the two parties. Neither is perfect, and neither is what I entirely agree with. But one headline that I just read 3 minutes ago was that that Biden would raise taxes $4.7 trillion and Trump would cut it $1.7 trillion. That's a pretty stark difference in economic approach. Now, where the sameness comes in is they're obviously both going to continue the spiraling debt. So there's where some sameness comes in. But in terms of how the average American will operate from a day-to-day basis, if the Democrats are in charge, there's going to be much more regulation, much more difficulty starting and keeping a business afloat versus the way that the Republicans would govern. Likewise, there's stark differences on the Second Amendment. Biden's already said he would like to confiscate AR-15s. There's many millions of those in the United States of America. Obviously, Republicans would not do that. So I think there's actually some stark differences in how they govern. I think it's just that there's, in terms of actually what they speak to, is where the differences are. What ends up happening because of that two-party system, then there's literally nothing that's going to happen, right? I mean, I don't really know what either party actually literally stands for, because neither party can actually govern.
Right. They care more about, and we'll get into the taxes and the Second Amendment stuff in a second. When you look at the discussion regarding what Republicans are for and what Democrats are for, it is very much, a friend of mine from high school at our 20th reunion said to me, "Taylor, with politics, it's all about the damn jersey." And she wasn't saying that. She was saying that as a negative, because it is all about the damn jersey. People care. Okay, I'm a Republican. Oh, you're a Democrat. Well, we can't work with each other.
Right.
You know, in the Georgia primary for U.S. Senate, you had Kelly Loeffler's campaign and a couple of other people who are fans of her go after Doug Collins because he was involved in justice reform and worked with a Democrat from New Jersey on justice reform.
Right.
And, you know, when you actually look at what the justice reform did, it was something conservatives should support because it would save money.
Right.
And it would actually give people chances to control their lives and to do that sort of thing. But because we are so factional at the moment, that's the issue. Now, let's also remember Congress is extremely broken right now.
Yeah.
Congress is extremely broken, and it's by their own decision making, right?
Right.
Congress is extremely broken because there is too much power within leadership. And not only that, Congress really doesn't want to do anything unless they can figure out a way to have a political gain for it.
Right.
Let's talk about Obamacare, right? Obamacare was seen as a major political gain for the Democratic Party.
Right.
Now, we can argue whether it was really a political gain or not, or it was really a gain for the country. We can argue about that, and you and I will probably agree that it really wasn't.
No.
But Democrats were willing to get that passed because, regardless of what was in the bill, because they thought it was a way to win the next election. Hmm. When you look at other bills that are there, you know, the only reason why justice reform was passed, and I hate to say this because I'm a humongous proponent of justice reform, the only reason why First Step Act passed was because Republicans within certain places of government, mainly on Pennsylvania Avenue, saw it as a way that they could advance in the next election, in the 2020 election. That's pretty much the only reason why it got done. And I'm glad it got done it's just disappointing it got done for that reason. But that's why you saw Congress pass the law. And, you know, when it comes to budget.
But isn't that the nature, though, of politicians? I mean, we're quibbling over the nature of politicians. Politicians, I don't know. There's maybe one or two politicians that I know. Actually, I'll name two of them. Senator Rand Paul and Congressman Thomas Massie. They're the only two politicians that I've come into contact with over time, gotten to actually know them as people. And I will tell you that they're in it for good reasons. I don't know any other politicians that are in it for any reason other than self-aggrandizement, power, position, and all of that. And so whether it's President Trump or whether it's Joe Biden, these people are in politics because it's the greatest popularity contest our society offers. So, I mean, to the extent that things only get done because of that, that's kind of on us. As the citizens, we're the ones that make it either popular or not popular to do certain things.
But here, well, yes. And here's the other thing, though, right? One of the reasons why Congress doesn't do a ton of stuff and they just do continuing resolutions and they don't do budgets and stuff like
that. And name post offices.
Is because you have all of these executive departments.
Right.
You have all of the, you know, the, I mean, think about it, right? Congress is supposed to set the rule of government. So let's sit there and imagine what would happen if every single regulation, which was brought upon by a, let's just say the Department of Energy, right? Let's say the Department of Energy came up with a new regulation. Well, instead of it being voted on by the bureaucrats, imagine what would happen if Congress had to vote on it.
Right.
Imagine what would happen if Congress had to vote on every single law, which or you know, i.e. regulation.
Well, what you're saying is exactly what Massie has said. Thomas Massie has said that we've turned our government over to bureaucrats, and then as you very accurately pointed out, The elected people can just do the namesakes. You know, they can just keep passing the Patriot Act over and over again and let the bureaucrats run it. They can keep passing the bills with names like the Child Justice Act and who knows what's behind it. And then the bureaucrats run it and the bureaucrats do all the damage that such a bill would allow to happen, right? You know, they name it one thing and it's actually the opposite. So, yeah, I mean, to that point, politics has become really... there's no meat to what's being done. And I think you bring up an interesting point. Maybe that's part of why the system doesn't work, because the people in power don't have to have accountability because it's the bureaucrats that are actually making the daily decisions. But I don't
know. Exactly.
My question then becomes, how do we unravel that? Because that is a recipe for the downfall of an empire.
All right. So, well, as being somebody who's not in favor of empires, but...
well, you know what I mean. I'm talking about, great society, self-government, what we've created here. Yeah.
All right. So here's what... here's what really needs to happen. And I was actually talking to Nick Gillespie of Reason Magazine about this, because I found this really interesting. I asked him, you know, hey, is there room for a third or fourth party? And Gillespie is a libertarian, like me. And his belief was there wasn't, mainly from a historical standpoint. You know, we talk about we talked about earlier about the major parties that have been in place throughout American history. However, the other thing that there is maybe one of the parties changes what it stands for, officially changes what it stands for, and people sit there and decide, okay, we're done with this. Mm-hmm. And the party ends up being replaced by another major party. So in that situation, I could definitely see that happening. The only question is, when is it going to happen?
Right.
You know, are you going to see this national populism that is really showing up in American politics right now. Your Josh Hawley's, your Donald Trump's, your Tom Cotton's, Ted Cruz to a certain extent. Rand Paul goes a little populist-y sometimes, but not to the extent of Hawley and Cotton and Cruz. And Trump, what is going to be, is that going to be something that the Republican Party is going to be able to count on for a while? You know, the populism on the left and the democratic socialism on the left of Ocasio-Cortez, of Bernie Sanders, of Elizabeth Warren, who is much more populist-y than I think she is anything else, is that going to survive? So I think it's possible what you're going to see in the next, it's hard to give a time frame of it, but you're going to see the populists really raise hell for a time period. And then maybe you'll see a shifting in policies in one party and the other. And maybe one party ends up being replaced by another party. Typically, if you look at the history of the United States, typically the quote-unquote right-wing parties are the ones that end up being replaced. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. If you want to call something right-wing, you look at the Democratic Republicans, you look at the Whigs, those were considered the quote-unquote right-wing parties of American, the anti-federalists. If you want to look at it like that, I don't like using the term right-wing and left-wing. I really don't like those terms. But, those are going to be the one that might end up being replaced. And a lot of it depends on how Republicans are going to feel and whether Republicans and Republican voters have if they really are going to sit there and say we can't, if they really reject populism. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I think there's some fissures in the Republican Party that are dangerous for it. I think there's a libertarian wing of the Republican Party, which includes people like me, although I'm not a Republican, but
yeah,
in terms of people who think like me, who generally would like to see a strong military but see us bring our troops home, who generally would like to see a much smaller government, much lower taxes, much more freedom. But I also am in the category of people of I don't care who people love and marry. I have my personal beliefs about it as an evangelical Christian believer. But I also feel very, very strongly and passionately that my attempt to convince others to believe what I believe must stop where government starts. And I think there's
I've heard somebody else say this before, and I can't think who. Oh, yeah, me.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a decidedly strong number of Christians who think like that now, who don't necessarily want to see our president slapping backs with Jerry Falwell. I think there's a lot of, and so there's some splits in the Republican Party. And then there's this sort of all in for MAGA thing that is not really a recognizable Republican thing. I mean, these are people that literally Trump could shoot someone in New York's Times Square and they literally would say they deserved it. I mean, there's that wing. And then there's the centrist wing of the Republicans who want a little bit lower taxes, but could see some gun control, some things like that. Those are probably the ones that might be tempted to throw in with a guy like Joe Biden, mistakenly thinking that he's going to be the moderate head of the Democratic Party. But it's those fissures that I think are the danger that you're spotting.
And the thing that you, to point out something about Biden appealing to, trying to appeal to centrists, the thing I found, and I had a tangle with Bill Scheer from Politico.
Yeah.
About this. And he was actually really helpful in discussing in discussing this sort of thing, he was helpful too. He and Nick Gillespie were very helpful on this. You know, the thing to remember, and Bill Scheer thinks that Biden is a centrist Democrat. However, the counter to that is Biden wants $11 billion in spending, in new spending.
Right.
You know, in the 2016 election, we had Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump try to outpromise each other on spending. Like, I think Clinton said she was going to spend $2 billion on infrastructure, and Trump went there and said, screw that, I'm going to spend $4 billion.
Right.
So that's, you know, that is the thing that you're running into about the current political climate, is both parties are, and this brings us back to our original discussion about both parties made, you know, pretty much agreeing with each other with some certain flashpoints.
Right.
You know, the other thing to remember about the Trump administration is this is the same administration. You say there are four fewer regulations and therefore less spending and therefore less taxes and therefore less gun control.
Right.
Why are bump stocks banned?
Right.
Because of action by the Trump administration.
Right. Right.
What is one of the larger taxes on the American people that only some people are talking about, but everybody else really isn't, because it gets into the entire thing of, well, do you care for the country's worker or not?
Right.
That would be tariffs. And tariffs are a tax on the residents of the country, because all the companies do to pay the taxes is they just raise prices.
Right. They pass it on
to offset that. Yeah. What about,
let me say, though, that banning a bump stock, which I'm against, is a far cry from banning an AR-15. And that's where the differences apply.
Oh, I agree. But this
tariff on an imported product is a far cry from enacting the Green New Deal, which will freeze economic growth in America for decades to come. You know, so, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that again, I'm pointing out there are major differences to how the two parties approach these things, for sure.
One of them wants it to be a little bit incrementally. The other one is more like, okay, we're going to take the whole swath. No, right. I get it. You know, and so in that sort of thing, what it's going to come down to when it comes to a third party coming in and a sustainable third party coming in.
Right.
It's going to be probably three things. One, you're going to have a political candidate. And I hate to say a political candidate. However, we all know that this is all a popularity contest. A political candidate with a set of ideals that people can get behind. And I'd rather it be the ideals first, but it's going to be the political candidate.
Right.
But a set of ideals and a political candidate people can get behind.
Right.
It's also going to take money. It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take big donors willing to give that money to do it. And not just a Sheldon Adelson or a George Soros or a Charles Koch.
So why hasn't the Libertarian Party found a candidate? I mean, I had Jo Jorgensen on the podcast. I think she's great. She's great. But she stakes out a position on the police that's untenable to the average American. You know, and it's like there's a lot in what she thinks about policing that I agree with in terms of potential justice reform and changing how some ways that we interact with the police. I think that's a legitimate conversation, but it seems like the libertarians always offer a party that goes or a politician that goes so far down a road that the vast majority of people just look at that and go, eh. You know what I mean? And it's like there's no dynamism. There's no I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is, because as someone who leans libertarian, I would love to see another person who had, you know, a legit shot at an independent run or something like that rise to the fore. I just don't know who is dynamic enough and who can explain and can do so in a way that, because ultimately politics comes down to kitchen table conversations. However, mm-hmm. however sometimes uninformed those conversations may end up being. It really is a sales pitch to people who don't spend their lives ensconced in deep policy discussions. And so a lot of times libertarians come to the table with these deep policy discussions. You know, we have to explain every asset, you know, every yeah. part of it. And it's like, no, we need to be able to package this in a way that a person sitting at a kitchen table can explain to their friend and say, here we go. And then they go, oh, that makes sense. And I don't see that on the horizon.
So because libertarians have, in my opinion, because libertarians tend to have very nuanced positions.
Right.
When it's not taxation is theft.
Right.
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 When they tend to have very nuanced positions, it's hard to sit there and boil it down to something that's not just, hey, we're for freedom and liberty.
Right.
You know, it's hard to do that. And listen, I love nuance. I love nuanced conversations,
right.
which is rather obvious, I think. at the same time, when it comes to a part of the issue with the Libertarian Party is, as you said, the ability to explain things without over-explaining them.
Right.
That is part of the problem.
Right.
And a friend of mine who is involved in libertarian politics, we were actually listening to a conversation I did with Joe Jorgensen, which was published at hotair.com. Cheap plug.
No problem. I love hotair.com.
You know, she was like, she's over explaining this. She doesn't need to go this far when it comes to that sort of thing.
Right.
And, you know, I agreed with her that she was, that Jorgensen was over explaining it a little, but at the same time, I think when you have such a nuanced thought on it, like you can sit there and say, okay, yeah, we're fine with having the police, but do they really need to enforce all the laws they're enforcing? You know, maybe that's a good start.
Right.
Maybe that's a good discussion, because
I think a way you could frame that is say, look, we need to keep our police fully funded, perhaps even pay them more. Maybe they would have more time to be more engaged in the community if they weren't enforcing so many damn laws. Right. Like, so that's not attacking the police. That's actually defending the police by saying, look, you guys don't need to have to go out and do all these things. We just need you to focus on safety and security. And that's like, to me, that's a way you could quickly frame that conversation that involves perhaps cutting back some of the interactions that police have with people on a daily basis simply by not having to enforce so many damn laws, you know?
Yeah.
And that's an easy conversation to have with somebody that fits at the kitchen table where it doesn't feel adversarial to the police, because a lot of those kitchen tables have police officers in their family, you know? And it's like, yeah. That's an easy way to break that conversation down. And I don't think it's not even an illegitimate position. It's not pandering. It's truly how I personally feel, right? I love police. I have so many friends in the police force. If they weren't there, you know, I had a guy parked not too far from my house the other day in our neighborhood. I just pulled up, rolled the window down, said, thanks for being here. You keep my neighborhood safer, right? But he wasn't bothering anybody. He wasn't knocking on anybody's door. He wasn't chasing anybody. He wasn't pulling anybody over. He was just hanging out for a little while. Presence of force, right? Made my neighborhood safer. I love police, but I also would rather them not have to go after every Tom, Dick, and Harry over every little thing, and I certainly would rather them not be doing no-knock raids in the middle of the night over nonviolent drug crimes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's a fairly simple position to state.
That is
a way that
is fairly simple.
Right.
And I think one of the things you run into in you know, in the Libertarian Party, you do have, you occasionally do have, occasionally do have some wacky people show up.
Right.
Is part of the issue. And because you run into a puritanical fight at times,
right? Yeah,
like Justin Amash, I think, would have been a really good presidential candidate for the Libertarians.
Agreed.
This cycle.
Agreed.
But he ran into so much flack because he was a former Republican. He ran into so much flack from certain sections of the Libertarian Party.
Right.
And I honestly think the pandemic didn't help either. And I'm honestly not really sure how much he wants to be president.
Right.
You know, he didn't really get a ton of traction.
But it's that kind of infighting, I think, that keeps the Libertarian Party from coming out to...
Well, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
No, I agree. But I think the nice thing is that you are seeing... I think there are some really good people in the Libertarian Party, and right. some really good people who know what they're doing, and they're trying to make the party a lot more organized and a lot more... meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
To give Jess Mears a shout out. Jess Mears is somebody who I think does a really good job. She's the membership manager of the National Libertarian Party. I think she does a really good job, and she actually does a nice job of seeing and organizing.
Right.
Now, it could just be, you know, because of public perception, you know, and the limited interactions I've had with her. But she seems to really care and want to make the party better.
Right.
You have the Libertarian Party of Ohio seems to be more organized than not. You know, but at the same time, I think that what you're running into is the Libertarian Party has to decide whether it wants to win elections or it wants to educate voters. And you can educate voters all you want, and that's a good thing. You know, educating voters is a good thing. I think you want to educate voters, and you want to say, hey, listen, there's an alternative way, because we're so dialed in on this Republican and Democrat thing.
Right.
We're really dialed in on that, right? And the Libertarians are sitting there going, hey, you know, you can go this way. And you do have, and you know, this feeling about the need for a third party. I mean, gosh, how long has it been, you know, since at least the early 90s, let's go with Ross Perot, right? The
right.
Reform Party, right?
Right.
Let's go
right.
with that. But this feeling of the need for a third party has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, you've got to be able to present a candidate who can win.
Right.
And I think, if you put Jorgensen on the debate stage and you put Spike Cohen on the debate stage, I think they would run circles around everybody.
I would love to see Joe Jorgensen on the debate stage. And again, this is what gets us back to the two-party system, where they set the rules for the debates. And the
yeah,
rules
and that's
are
the problem.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? You have to
when
have
the
like
presidential
15
commission on the when the presidential commission on the debate is, on debates is run by the Republican and the Democratic Party.
Right. Right.
You're not going to get people in.
Yeah, I mean, and what are the rules? I think the rules are like you have to have 15% before you can step on the stage. And it's like, how do you have 15% when you have all of the money sucked up by two parties? And you literally can't get in front of people, you know, and it's, I guess the Libertarians have to take a bit of their own medicine there and be like, well, you know, if you want to do better, but it's there's kind of a gaming of the system there. But again, also the parties would not want someone to come up there that's not allegiant to either one of them, because they would embarrass both parties, and very quickly, because Joe Jorgensen is very intelligent, you know, and has well thought out points of view. So, yeah, that would be interesting. So,
and that is a definite issue. At the same time, I think there are ways to figure that out. And some of that, you know, honestly, I think what the media could sit there and say is, you know, something like a major broadcast company could sit there and say, or like the League of Women Voters, you know, could team up with the League of Women Voters and say, okay, we're going to do a debate and extend invitations to, you know, all the, you know, all parties who are on the who are on the ballots in 50
but
states.
The two major parties won't show up, and then nobody will watch it.
But you know, yeah, but you know something, but here's the thing, you do it anyway,
right?
Screw it, do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And if it means it's a one-on-one conversation with Joe Jorgensen and Howie Hawkins, although the Green Party is not on all 50 state is not on all 50 ballots. But if it's just a one-on-one conversation with Joe Jorgensen, then it's a one-on-one conversation with Joe Jorgensen. You have her up there for an hour expressing her opinions, and you challenge her on stuff, and you try to get her, you know, you try to see where she stands, and, she, you know, she either floats or she doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
So do it anyway.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Got a couple of minutes here before I have to wrap up. What's the solution then to this? Because my thinking is that being able to coalition with maybe a third party could potentially that in some ways sometimes the Democratic Party and the Libertarian Party align, usually along the lines of privacy and that kind of thing, potentially internet freedom. And then sometimes the Democrat or the Libertarian Party and the Republicans align on gun freedom and economic freedom. Perhaps the Libertarians would push that a little bit farther, which would be good. But you could see the ball moving on things like real tax reform and real privacy reform. If you had a party that controlled maybe just 20% of Congress that could coalition with either of the other two, and then it would matter less if the Democrats or the Republicans had the majority over the other, and it would advance the ball more on things that would force conversations. What is the solution, if not that? You know, quickly, what is the solution to the situation we have where there's this logjam? Things of real importance don't get done. More post offices get renamed, but real things don't get done. More bureaucrats get put in charge of more areas of our life, but things of importance don't get done. What's the solution?
The solution is time, which people aren't going to be in favor of because they want stuff
I'm not
now.
Sure the country has time.
Yeah, no, I get it. The solution is time, but the solution is also money. And the solution is finding the right candidate.
Right.
And in that sort of thing, it's going to... There are two ways you can do this. You can either try to win big in a national election, or you can try to win big in a state and local election and grow your power that way. I tend to prefer the growing power incrementally, mm-hmm. meaning you start at the local level, you get someone elected, then you make it to the state level, then you make it to the federal level. You know, people get so focused nationally, that's what it's going to be. I prefer starting small and growing from there. That takes longer and people might get frustrated, but that's kind of my thought on it. The only other solution there is for there to be a major realigning of the two parties. Maybe you see a portion of the Republican Party split off and join the Democrats, and you see a portion of the Democrats split off and join the Republicans, and you see another shifting in power, or you see Republicans and Democrats who agree on certain issues go, you know something, we're going to form our own party, and you end up having one of the major party die, and it gets taken over by it, and you have another major party come about.
Right.
So those, from a historical standpoint, that's probably what's going to happen at some point.
Right.
The only question is when.
Yeah. We'll see. It's good.
I know. That's unfortunately the only answer we have is we'll see.
Yeah.
And who knows if there will be a country when that happens. Hopefully there will be.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
What do you think is going to happen after the election? I mean, I'm hearing a lot of people talk about potential unrest, and this is honestly the scaredest I've ever seen Americans about our country's future.
I honestly have no clue, and I have no clue.
Yeah.
I think the notions of unrest are overblown.
I do too. I really think
a majority of Americans are just going to be like,
well, that was interesting. That's what we're going to do. Well, look at what we did after the masks. It's hard for me to think that there will be unrest. I do believe that, but it won't be. I don't believe it'll be civil war scale, because are you kidding me? As many people as very quickly conform to every single rule about COVID are now going to take up arms and hit the streets? I don't think so.
Yeah, we'll see. And the pandemic makes things even more interesting, because people are getting tired of being locked up in their homes.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. Well, we will see. As always, we will have to see. And I think that, one, I guess, quote that comes to mind, and I paraphrase, but all that it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to stand by and do nothing. And I do think, and I will say this as a way of kind of wrapping up this conversation, whether you're libertarian, you know, whether you're Republican, or whether you are one of the few sane Democrats out there, and you're hearing this conversation, you know, take the initiative to stand up and do the right thing. You know, be kind to each other, and do the right thing, you know, and call for the right policies. Because I think all of this is going to end up starting with us. We get the government we deserve. We hate each other now over who we voted for in 2016 or who we didn't vote for or whatever. But the truth of the matter is, we get the leadership that we deserve. We're the reason why anyone rises to power politically. So sit back and think about that, right?
And be willing to work with the other side.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't mean you guys have to agree on everything. It doesn't mean you guys have to agree on... Yeah, it doesn't mean you have to agree on everything. But be willing to work on the other side. One of the reasons why justice reform did get passed was because you had a sufficient amount of Republicans and Democrats come together and say, you know something? Let's give people a second chance. Yeah. Let's reduce the power of government.
Yep. Yeah. For once.
For once. So be willing to do that.
Yeah, I agree. As always, it's fun talking to you. I enjoy your thought. I enjoy your nuanced positions and the way you thoughtfully approach different issues. And you're very informative. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Leland. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Taylor Millard. He is a writer and a journalist and a terrific guy. Fascinating conversations. Is the two-party system broken? You know, well, I don't intend for you to take from this conversation that we had even necessarily a final opinion on that. If you're a Republican, if you're a Trump supporter, if you're deeply ensconced in the machinations of your political party of choice, that's fine. What I'm hoping people just take from this is to sit back and think about, because there really is a palpable fear out there and about what comes next. And I think it's just partially... it's blown up because the way this year has gone, you know, I mean, this year has just been one thing after another. It's been a frightening year to be an American. And I think that's created a sense of unease and tension that has added to the already palpable political tension that ends up happening every 4 years when we are trying to elect a president of the United States. So the idea behind this is just to throw out some thoughts. You know, how could we do what we are doing in America better? What I don't ever want to see happen. I honestly love American history, and I love our country, and I love our system, and I love freedom, and I love liberty, and I love self-government and self-determination so much. I love it more than any political party. It's why I'm not a member of any political party anymore. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent, because I don't want to owe allegiance to a political party that may or may not at times have allegiance to those principles. And I'm not saying the Republicans don't. Most Republicans do. But I'm saying a party will put itself as precedent over those ideas. And for me, those ideas are paramount. They're the end-all, be-all. The idea that every human being born, regardless of the color of their skin, regardless of the religious belief system that they hold, regardless of how they look, regardless of it, that every single person who is born should have a set of inalienable rights given to them by the creator of the universe and not by some government. The idea that government is there for our benefit and to serve us, not the other way around. These core ideas of how America was founded are far more important to me than how many Republicans or how many Democrats sit in the vaulted seats of power in Washington, right? This idea that you're born and you set your destiny, you build your dreams, you determine what's in your family and yourself's best interest, and you work towards that. And out of that sense of idealism comes community and caring and kindness to each other. It doesn't come from government down. This is what the left in America so mistakenly thinks fixes our problems, that the government forces upon us the need to be kind to each other. That's not how it works. Kindness, compassion, helping others comes innately from someone who is self-sufficient and can do things on their own and forges their own path. And then that kindness and compassion comes out of that. And truly the most compassionate ideology is the ideology that says you and everyone else should be free, right? These things are more important to me than any political party could ever dream of being. And so this is what my fear is, that we're reaching a place, an apex. We have what I remember a left-wing person in the media once tried to insult me. I was at a UK basketball game. I was sitting down on press row, had been covering the game prior. And this person, who you all know, but I won't name, I was having a political conversation with somebody sitting on press row, not because I started it. In fact, I didn't like doing politics away from my show. I'm a normal person. I just wanted to have a conversation. But this person that I knew was like, hey, what do you think about? And of course, I answered him because I'm polite. And so we were having a conversation about it. And this person, who literally everyone listening knows, but I'm not going to say, a very prominent media personality, literally leans forward and injects himself into the conversation and says, Leland, you're the worst combination of stupid and a forum. Now, I got to tell you that later this person came back and apologized to me for saying that. But the goal in that comment was that they wanted me to know that they didn't like my politics and that they thought I was stupid and that it was bad that I was given a forum to articulate my stupidity or whatever. And what I think about that particular comment is that is some ways what America feels like today, that we are, as a nation, the worst combination of stupid in a forum. We've been given social media that amplifies our voices, and yet we're not informed on the things around us. We have successfully dumbed down an entire generation of people by taking away their ability to think critically and understand capitalism and understand self-reliance and responsibility. We've turned those into bad things. We've destroyed our history. We've made an entire generation of people think that our country is awful and our system of government is awful and it's oppressive, all things that are lies. And then we have turned over the power of politics to that generation. So I'm concerned for the future of a country that doesn't understand where it came from, you know, and so that is concerning to me. So we have to bring it upon ourselves to educate ourselves better and understand things better and educate our children better and try to get back to that idea that the principles of liberty come first. The principles of liberty come first in terms of political talks, like way before political power. I don't know how we get there. I mean, I'm bloviating at this point because I'm talking in like this sort of high-minded way that how does that function? you know. So anyway, all right, that's it. I just wanted to. That was a fun conversation. I enjoy Taylor Millard. I appreciate him popping on here. Hey, I want to thank one of our sponsors to this program, Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. They're so terrific. Tim Montgomery, his crews work very hard. They have great craftsmanship. So we live in a different house now, but our last house, they did the kitchen for us, and it really was beautiful. And in fact, that house sold in less than a day. I am confident that the work that Tim Montgomery at Louisville Cabinets and Countertops did on our kitchen helped that house sell quickly because it was beautiful. And there's just no two ways around it. And we loved it. We absolutely loved it. And I would use them 1,000 times from Sunday. And we actually had them do our master bath as well because the work they did was so good. And the thing I like about them is that they'll take you from the beginning of the project all the way through. Don't worry about it if you don't know what design you want. Don't worry about it if you don't know what colors you want. Don't worry about it. Just go see them, and they'll walk you through it. They'll take a look at your house. They'll take a look at your style, and then they'll help you kind of arrive at where you want to be, and you'll be like, wow, this is awesome. So you can check them out at LouisvilleCabinetsAndCountertops.com, and they're over at 6200 Hit Lane and in Louisville, and you can just, you know, pop by there and see the showroom if you want, or just give them a call, 502-930-3304, and tell Tim you heard about it on Leland's podcast, The Disruption Zone. Thanks also to JP Web Design, as well as Dynamics Audio Productions. And thanks to my co-host, co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, who will be on an episode this week. Looking forward to having that. And you can find us on Google Play, also on iTunes, or I guess there is no iTunes anymore, Apple Podcasts, and on iHeartRadio's app. Just search The Disruption Zone and you can get fresh new episodes downloaded straight to your computer. Please share this with everyone. We appreciate the thousands of hits that we're getting a week, but we want to continue to grow, so please share this with your friends so you can hear to continue to hear our voice. And you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And also on Instagram at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.